Welcome back, everyone. We are going to go ahead and discuss pesticide labels and labeling. This is a PowerPoint presentation put together by Dr. Toth and Wayne Bueller, both of NC State. This PowerPoint I did get off the Department of Agriculture's website. You know, it's used in their pesticide training. So if you were to probably go to the pesticide school, this would be one of the PowerPoints that you guys would see. So let's go ahead and get started. If you read Chapter 4 in your textbook, this will help you out a lot. You know, with this PowerPoint. And remember, you know, this PowerPoint is coming from Applying Pesticides Correctly. This is, you know, the older version. You've got the new textbook, the core manual. So you want to read the core manual. It'd probably be better to read that before you viewed the lecture. But again, I'll leave that up to you. Anything that's in your textbook, though, you are held responsible for. This PowerPoint doesn't cover everything that is in Chapter 4. The pesticide labels and labeling, the label is the information printed on or attached to the pesticide container. It's the pretty picture that's attached to it. It's like, you know, a Coca-Cola or Pepsi. You know, you go to the gas station, you go back there, you know, it's what catches your eye. It is very attractive and eye-catching. But remember, don't purchase a pesticide based on the looks of the label. You want to purchase a pesticide that's going to take care of the pest that you may have. But the label, it's printed on the container. Labeling includes the label itself, which is the pretty picture on the bottle, plus all other information you receive from the manufacturer about the product. It could be brochures, it could be leaflets, anything that they're giving to you. And guys, what I recommend doing is when you go and you purchase your pesticide, ask the dealer, do they have any labeling information? You know, the label is going to be on the container, but ask the dealer, say, hey, do you have any other information from the manufacturer? Or is there anything that the county extension office has dropped off about this product? And also ask them for the material safety data sheet. We'll talk more about that at the end of this lecture, but you'll want to have that material safety data sheet with you along with the labeling. And I always put it together in a notebook and kept with me in my truck when I'm applying the pesticides. I have that notebook that has the label, labeling, and material safety data sheet in case I get pulled over by the pesticide inspector. Now granted, the label is going to be on the container, but look, you're going to have it out in the truck. It's going to be exposed to humidity, things like that during the day. You may get it off the truck and catch it on the corner of the tailgate. It might rip. You know, a lot of those labels is a plastic wrap on the container, so it can easily fall off. The pesticide labeling gives users instructions on how to use the product safely and correctly, and it also is required by law. The pesticide users are required by law to comply with all instructions and directions for use in pesticide labeling. So anything that's there, guys, what it's telling you to do and what it's telling you that you cannot do, you must follow that because it is the law. The label is the law. EPA approval of labeling. The EPA has certain labeling information requirements and must approve all language proposed by the manufacturer. The EPA reviews the labeling to make sure it contains the information needed for safe and effective use of the product. Labeling supported by toxicity, residue, and environmental data from the manufacturer, and the EPA must approve any changes in labeling. And as your textbook stated, sometimes EPA approval may take up to 6 years. That's quite a bit of time. You're working for a chemical company. You've discovered a new way to control pest. Well, it could take you 6 years to get this approved. And then you've got to market it. You've got to produce it and then get it on the shelf for sale. So it does take some time, guys. Restricted use classification is going to be part of the pesticide label. You're going to see it. It's going to have it in capital, restricted use pesticide. It's going to be in a box at the top of the label. Reasons for the designation may be stated, you know, whether it's acute toxicity, groundwater concerns, or et cetera. And if you look in your textbook, you have the nomatodes. And as you can see, I like the way this label is presented in your textbook. You've got the numbers on it, and then in the following pages, it talks more in detail about each one of those numbers. But you have a restricted use pesticide. due to high acute toxicity and toxicity to wildlife was your nomatotes. Brand name, Roundup. You know, one of my favorite labels to talk about, but it's the brand or trade name of the product given by the manufacturer. The manufacturer is Monsanto, but it's located on the front panel of the label. And when I was talking about like a wrap around the jug, you know, we buy our chemicals in either 2.5 gallon jugs or, you know, 50 gallon drums, you know. So you've got this wrap, you know, that's not actually printed to the container. Sometimes it is. But you know, that could get snagged, pulled, ripped off. Humidity makes it buckle. The sunlight will dry it out. So this label may come off. So having that information in the truck is going to be invaluable to you guys, especially if that falls off. Well, what you got to do is get out your notebook and you've got to write down some required information that's going to be on it. As like if you use the tipping pour, you got to have that pesticide marked and clearly with the label on it so you know what it is. But again, you know, brand name is going to be on the front. Also, parts of the pesticide label, the ingredient statement, active ingredients and their percentages is going to be listed. It's going to be listed by the chemical and or their common name, like glyphosate is Roundup. The inert ingredients not required to be named, but the amount of it in the container must be on the label. So you may see some pesticides that have inert ingredients up to 65%, maybe even more. So you know, basically, you're looking at just fillers within that pesticide container. Registration number, the EPA registration number must be on the label, and it indicates that the product has been approved by the EPA. And your nematodes example in your textbook has the registration number. It is listed in number 5 on page 58 in your textbook. The establishment number must be on the label or container. Identifies the facility where the product was manufactured. Needed in case of questions or concern regarding the product. Well, establishment number is like the facility where it's made. Then you have the name and address of the manufacturer. Those could be different. The name and address of the manufacturer distributor of the product must be identified on the label. Basically, need to know where that corporate office is. That's what we're talking about, you know, the manufacturer. The manufacturer may have two or three facilities where they actually produce the product. So that's why we're going to have that establishment number. That establishment number is going to tell us where it's made. And the establishment number for the nematodes in your textbook is 122-NC-2, and the abbreviation NC represents that product was made in a facility in North Carolina. Net contents, the amount of pesticide in the container, it's going to be in there, pounds, gallons, pints, it's going to be located on the front of the gallon. In our pesticide label, we saw that that was a 1 gallon, 1 gallon container of Roundup in a previous slide. The type of pesticide, you know, underneath Roundup it said herbicide, so it lets us know that it's the control of weeds or pretty much any type of vegetation. It is a non-selective herbicide, meaning it's going to kill anything that's green. The type of formulation is included on the label, often as part of the brand name, abbreviated, you know, either WP, EC. You will see that nomatodes. In her textbook, Nomatodes 3E. It is 3 pounds active ingredient of emulsifiable concentrate. Nomatodes 3E. So you're already noticing by reading the name of that. Well, you will after a couple more lectures. But Nomatodes, the trade name, Nomatodes 3E, 3 pounds of active ingredient that's an emulsifiable concentrate. All that by just reading the name of the pesticide, we found out that much information from it. Signal words, danger, warning, caution. Your textbook even uses danger poison because, you know, it can be very lethal or cause serious illness if it says danger, poison. But all of those must be on the pesticide label on the front, and you're also going to see, you know, keep out of the reach of children. But danger, pesticide that's highly toxic, cause acute illness. You're going to see poison skull, crossbones. and severe eye or skin irritation. Warning, pesticide is moderately toxic. Caution, the pesticide is slightly toxic. Statement of practical treatment, instructions on how to respond to emergency exposure to the product. The first aid usually is on the front of the panel. Sometimes you'll see a note to the physician on how to, what the antidote is, for the poisoning. Precautionary statements, statements on the hazards of the product to humans and domestic animals, whether it's acute, chronic, and or allergic effects. Personal protection equipment that may be used, PPE, environmental hazards, and physical or chemical hazards that may be associated with the pesticide. Directions for use. They're directly under the heading directions for use. You're going to see that there. You're going to see the following statement. It is a violation of federal law to use this product in any manner inconsistent with its labeling. You've heard this more than once so far in HOR 164. Pests that the manufacturer claims the product will control is going to be listed there. Sites which the product is intended to protect. And then the correct amount of pesticide to use or rate. And we're going to see the rate, and this is how we're going to determine how much of the pesticide we're going to apply to a certain property when we get involved with pesticide mathematics. You're going to see instructions for mixing and applying the product. Directions on when and how often the product can be applied. Nomatodes, we could put up to 10 acres a day on a golf course, and then I think we had to wait 3 days before we could apply any more nomatodes to that same golf course. It's found on the pesticide label. Statement on when people can enter the treated area after application. Sometimes that can be as short as pesticide must dry. Other times it may wait 24 hours, 48 hours. Instructions on the storage and disposal of the pesticide container and restrictions on the use of the product. When reading the pesticide label, you must read it prior to the purchase. For one, to make sure it's the pesticide that you need. Are you going to be able to use it safely? Do you have the proper equipment for application? Do you have the backpack sprayer? Do you have the rotary sprayer, or is it can only be applied by a drop spreader? Do you have that equipment? The concentration of the product should be in the range suitable for the area you're treating. Well, you may have a pest in a certain area, let's say a wetland. You can use the pesticide in a wetland if you only use it at the lowest rate possible. Well, at that lowest rate possible, that pesticide may not kill the pest you're intending to kill. So you need to make sure that you can use that pesticide in the area that you're going to be using it. You may be able to use it at a lower concentrate that may not kill the pest versus if the pest was away from the wetland area, you could use the high dosage rate and actually kill the pest. So make sure. Prior to mixing, you need to read it, check the personal protective equipment required, make sure you have all the PPE necessary to apply, mix, and handle the pesticide. And a lot of times your pesticides are going to require more PPE when mixing and loading versus then applying it. And why do you think that is? Well, for one, when you're mixing it, you're dealing with a higher concentrate. A 2.5 gallon jug of Roundup spilled on you is more dangerous than having 3 ounces per 3 gallons in a backpack sprayer. I mean, it's very diluted. That concentrate could be more harmful to you. So that's why a lot of times reading the label, you'll find out that you have to wear the plastic apron, plastic gloves, face shield, whereas you don't have to wear all that when you're applying the pesticide. Read the label prior to application. Determine if the product is registered for the site. When you can apply it, sometimes you'll read on the label, it says, do not apply this pesticide if temperatures exceed 90 degrees. Well, if you're a lawn care operator and it says that, when can you do your spraying? It's going to have to be early morning. It's going to tell you your safety measures required, the proper application rate, and the use restrictions and proper application methods and special instructions. Read that prior to application. Then you're going to read it prior to storage and disposal. Learn where and how to store the product, where not to store it, and how to dispose of the excess pesticide in a container. And guys, also, some of these pesticides are going to require that they be locked up, so you may need to have a toolbox on your truck. For one, pesticides are expensive. I'm going to lock them all up. But you may not be able to store some pesticides in the same toolbox. They just, I mean, you don't want to take the chance of those guys mixing and having a situation where you've got to call in a hazmat team. You know, read the labels and make sure that you're storing it and transporting it correctly. Material safety data sheets. In response to public demands for the right to know, federal government requires employers to maintain information on those materials kept on their premises, mandated by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. Uniform material safety data sheets, MSDS sheets, can be mandated, has been mandated, and most manufacturers have complied. Typically, when you buy the pesticide, you're going to get an MSDS sheet. It depends on who you're buying it from. Always ask for it. You know, they have to keep that information available. Sometimes they may have to print it off the internet, but if you need a copy, do it. If, you know, for some reason you don't get one, make sure that you have it at all times when you're applying this pesticide. You need to have an in-contact label, one that's not destroyed on the actual container itself. Any extra labeling, and your material safety data sheets. Like I said, keep them in a notebook, keep them in your truck, and you're going to you're protecting yourself and your workers. Contents of an MSDS sheet. Product specification, you're going to have the trade name, the chemical name, so we'll say Roundup, glyphosate, or there's even super glyphosate, CSA number, health hazards, what's acute, chronic effects of the chemical, especially the routes of entry. You know, you may be able to get a little bit on your skin. It's not going to be so detrimental to you, but if swallowed, it may kill you. So the MSDS sheet's going to tell you those health hazards. Toxicological data, it's going to tell you the oral, dermal, inhalation, the LD50s. LD50s is lethal dose of 50% of the population. We'll talk more about that in future lectures. Eye and skin effects. You'll read data on chronic, carcinogenic, mutagenic, developmental, reproductive, neurological effects. All of these toxic data will be included on that MSDS sheet for you. You need to know it, and your workers need to know it. Ecological data, the effects on the environment is going to be on the MSDS sheet. The first aid measures, the handling precautions, again, handling and storage, even transport, and the PPE that's going to be required for each of those. It's going to contain the fire and hazard explosion hazards, the flash points of the chemical, how to put the fire out if it catches on fire, and it's going to give notes to firefighters. A lot of times, you know, you're going to see firefighters come and do inspections, especially like on commercial facilities. Well, they're going to want to see an MSDS sheet for pretty much all the chemicals you have, especially your pesticides. It's going to contain spill or leak procedures. How do we clean that up? Disposal procedures. Most of the time, it's triple rinse, puncture holes in the container, and you can, you know, dispose of it in a landfill. It's going to have the physical data, you know, what the form is, if it's a liquid, granular, the color, the odor, the molecular weight, the boiling point, melting, freezing point, and the solubility in water of the chemical. Stability and reactivity, the effects of moisture, temperature, and other factors on the chemical are also going to be stated in the MSDS. Transportation information, the hazard class of the chemical, the placarding requirements, and emergency telephone numbers. Some of these chemical guys, you're going to actually have to have a placard on your truck when you're transporting the chemicals. You've all seen the tractor and trailers with the signs on the back of it. That's going to allow, you know, firefighters, EMS, police, the DMV of the chemicals that you're transporting. A lot of times with lawn care and landscape, we don't have to do that. But sometimes in agricultural settings, when we're transporting pesticides from fields to fields, you may have to have placarding. And it's also going to have the manufacturer information, name and address, and emergency telephone numbers, and any disclaimers that the manufacturer may have is all going to be part of the MSDS. And again, this is coming from applying pesticides correctly. It's not your textbook. You know, your textbook is the core manual. This is a good PowerPoint, and I wanted to show that to you. Still, you know, the information in chapter 4 is what you're going to be tested on. This just, you know, touched on some of the important aspects. I do want you guys to really know what the emergency exemptions are, special local needs. You know, those are times you may not have to use it in your horticulture career, but you may know somebody that's actually had to use a special local needs. And you'll at least know what it is. And information like that is going to be on your state exam to get your license. So please make sure you understand that. And again, if you have any questions, please post it to the discussion board or send me an email. And I will see you guys in the next lecture. Thank you.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.